with everybody. Happy whatever day this ends up dropping, but I suspect it's going to be a Friday drop. So this is the special Keynote September preview episode. The sale is almost here. It's by the time all of our listeners are hearing this, it's going to be, I think that Monday it's going to start. We're here. It's that sale we've all talked about. We've been talking about it. We've been hyping everybody up. We've got, you know, some horses that we're going to keep our eyes on, but other than that, I'm excited for this sale. I know Jared is psyched about this sale. Mark, yes. You're here to join us to come talk a little bit about what you're kind of looking for this year at the sale. Are you as excited as we are?
Absolutely. Even more so. But you know, it's starting to get focused and getting my happy place for looking at horses. So trying to get my mind clear and... one of the biggest things for me personally is it's better for me and better for everybody else when we're out here trying to look at these horses and pick them out that, we're not worrying about this or that or have other things in our my mind. That's what I think of leading up to the sales, you know, just try to be a blank slate and have nothing going on inside your head about other than kind of what's in front of you with these horses. So.
Yep. Horses, and nothing else on the brain.
That's exactly right.
Well, it's going to be a marathon. It's going to be well over 4,000 horses again this year. It's a huge sale every year, but especially when, as I was going through the catalog, I'm sure many folks have kind of maybe made a little notice of this as well as they were going through it. There's a lot of quality even towards the back where years and years and years ago, kind of the back books were kind of for everybody else that got priced out of the early ones. But it seems to me like there's just quality up and down the sale this year. Like, it's just everywhere. You can get a potentially a good horse from almost anywhere, it feels like, at this point.
One thing you did mention that, you know, that I thought of right away was how long the sale is. And one thing I think of is pacing yourself. Yep. We don't have the budget to buy six-figure horses. So, you know, and in prior years, you know, we've just gone up there and tried to work the whole sale and see every horse. And it's counterproductive because when the time, what we need to do is when it's most likely that we're going to be buying, we need to be our freshest and not be in a situation where, you know, it's the second week of the sale and it's book five and book six and you're dragging already. And I try to time it to where even physically, because it's a grind physically too, a lot of walking by, and you know how hot it's going to be, that's a factor. But I think listeners might be interested in how another issue is literally pacing yourself for the sale to be able to do good work, you know.
So yeah, on top of that, Mark, too, I think it's good to be, you got to be fresh mentally too, because I know we've gone up there in the early portions of the sale before, when we were operating with maybe some higher budgets where we kind of scaled back on buying the six figure horses, and we're not really doing that anymore. But when we used to, I remember, we'd see something that we'd really like, and you go up there ready to spend $100-$125 and it goes for $250, and you do that a dozen times throughout the first 4 or 5 days that you're up there looking, and I think you can start to press a little bit, and you're like, God, we're never going to get one. We got to do something. And so I think, just scaling back and like you said, going into it when we feel like we're most likely to be able to buy something, so that, we're not pressing because we've seen so many get by us already that we like so much. I think it's just another advantage of just, holding back and not being up there, trying to make something happen early when the likelihood that it's going to happen early is pretty small.
There was a time when we did that, and initially we thought that, that kind of money could separate us from other buyers and take us to another level, to get more, you know, to the horses we really wanted, you know, the pedigrees and the physicals we really wanted. But gosh, I think we were about, when we did that, we were 3 or 4 years too late, because you did, it didn't separate you. Everybody's, it just seems like everybody up there's got 250, 200. And the market is such nowadays that, you know, everybody, you're more apt to find somebody to give you 250, 300 for a horse that ticks every box than you are to find, it's easier to find that person who's going to spend six figures on the perfect sales horse than it is to find somebody who just wants a nice little horse for $30,000 or $40,000. And when you're going to spend that kind of money, you kind of, you jump into that pool, you know, with all the pin hookers that, they even spend that kind of money, you know? I felt like, it was easier to buy when we were spending $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, because I just felt like there was less competition at that level. It doesn't sound, you know, it doesn't sound right, but that's in the way it works out. That's what I've noticed.
We've gone up there and we've bought those six figure horses and, you know, they've done okay here and there, but you know, the bottom line is our bread and butter, our best horses have been purchased in that $20,000 to $50,000 range. Well, even Storm Temple Pilot, $10,000, you know, Temple City Terror, $22,000, Irish Aces, $40,000, Oscar Season 30, Aces High was 50, and the Copper Plate was a little bit higher. I think he was 70, but still, he right in that range. And you know, I think we've had such good luck. Hell, I mean, Victory Morning, you know, granted it was at Charlestown, but she won four races and $60,000, and you know, our very first horse was around $10,000. And
did you say Storm Temple Pilot?
Storm Temple Pilot, like, yeah, $10,000, and however much she won, it was not a small amount. And so, you know, it's just that's where we've been super successful. And you know, when we a couple years ago, when we looked back and kind of looked at everything, and we saw our success rate at that level of purchase versus our success rate for the six figure plus horses, and it made the most sense to scale back, stop going for the six-figure horses where we're competing with literally everybody, and just go on and finding what we consider to be, you know, good, strong physicals and horses that we could develop into race horses.
And the reality is we are, by and large, purchasing horses that cannot be pinhooked, that are perfectly good racing prospects, but people can't make money off of them because of their vet report, because of their breeding, their physical, but I see it, and the other buyers. And when I say this, I feel like the majority of buyers are not buying these yearlings to race them. They're buying them to make money with them, and so I feel like they dominate the market. They dominate what's left of the middle market and the upper parts of the market even. And but there's all these horses that, you know, aren't going to be able to breeze 9 and 4 in 5 or 6 months, you know, that look like they're going to take some time, that buyers don't want to take a chance on being a little offset in the knee or, you know, a little flake or chip or things like that. And there's tons of those kind of horses on there that people can't make money with, that aren't going to sell for a lot of money. And it just creates, and I've told multiple people this, I honestly feel like the softest spot in the entire thoroughbred market is young racing prospects, end user young racing prospects, because there's tons of them around. And because other people can't make money off of them, they sell cheap, and it just creates great opportunities for us.
Yeah, I think a lot of those too. You know, we were talking a little bit this morning. We're out at Silver Springs. You know, a lot of those horses turn out being turf horses. You know, that not a lot of turf horses getting pinhooked, or at least the out and out turf horses getting pinhooked.
Yeah,
I don't think it's
any coincidence that our biggest successes have come on the turf, because you don't pinhook yearling to 2 year olds for turf. You know, they're looking for dirt horses that are going to go very fast for an eighth of a mile. And, with Irish Aces, he's by M. Sherwish, a sire that, didn't make it over here. And, he had some dirt and some turf form, as I recall. But, that's something where we have an edge also, something that doesn't have fancy breeding. We will look at anything, colt, filly, short, long, dirt, turf. We just want something that is good and can run. And its pedigree will only determine what we pay for it, not whether or not we'll buy it. So that's another thing that helps us out quite a bit, too. Pedigree is not the end-all, be-all. We'll still buy a horse that has no pedigree, but it's just going to affect how much we're going to spend on it.
So talk a little bit about, we're going to go up there. I don't know if you and I have talked about this before, how you like to go, 1 or 2 days early when we're probably not going to be buying, but you like to start going around looking at horses, kind of sharpen your eye a little bit.
Yeah.
I would assume, obviously not this weekend, but the next weekend, that's something that you'll be looking at doing. And then, but let's just kind of talk about how we operate when it's time for us to get serious about trying to buy horses.
Well, there's one of two ways. And when we start, I like to go back. Ideally, the way I do this is see the horse a day or two before it sells and see, let's just say round figure 50 horses that day. And out of that 50, I'd probably, I've been through all my lists over time, and I usually shortlist about 10 to 15% of the horses I look at. And ideally, say I'd look at 50 in a day that are selling in a day or two. And I'd keep 5 or 6 of them, or maybe 7. And then come back the next day and see those 5 to 7 just with each other, to see how the best of what I looked at stacked up. Because I might have one on my short list that I put him on there just because the previous 15 were so bad. He was just good by comparison. So I like to look at those kind of standouts with each other and see who's left. And after I do that, we'll drop 2 to 3, 3 to 4 maybe. And then those are the horses we're going to have vetted out. And so we'll pull the vet work on them. We'll lose a horse or two from the vet work. I would say that we are liberal buyers on vet work. I want to buy a horse. If a horse has made it that far, I really want to buy it. And the vet, and there are issues that I are just no-nos for me that, we just won't do it. Lower joints, knee issues, big OCD lesions, call them, the big ones that are in their stifle. But some of these smaller things that scare people off create opportunities for us too. So we're down to, after they've made the short list, after they've made the second cut, been by the vet for every 50 we look at, we've probably got 2 or 3 that we go bid on and we try to buy those horses. And it probably takes 10 of those that we go bid on to actually get something. And so that's one way. Now, what happens, on a small team like ours, when the sale starts, when we're in to when we've started looking and it's day or two or three, and we just can't keep up with, the number of horses, the volume that's going through the ring, I'll morph into going to the back sales ring and let them bring the horses to us. It's a lot more time effective, and I feel like now you know, we've had enough success doing it both ways. I feel very comfortable doing it either way. But like I say, once this, the sale kind of snowballs on us, I'll go to the back, very back ring, try to catch these horses, as they're, you know, 20 to 30 hips before they go to the ring, and just watch all day long, you know, horses going around, going around, going around, trying to find a horse that, kind of, I call it, pulls me off the wall, makes me come and take a closer look at it. And, you know, the walk, how they're handling themselves, and mainly the walk, that's what you're looking for at that time, you know, size. You know, I don't, you know, a horse that's lathered up and whinnying everywhere and kicking out, they're just not handling the pressure and stress of the sale, very well. And, you know, it makes you nervous about how they're going to be at the racetrack. So kind of try to avoid that, but looking for something that is athletic. And, if it pulls me off the wall, the consigners are really good about getting a space up there in the back ring where you can kind of put the horse through its paces like you would out back, you know, watch it walk away from you, watch it walk at you, watch it walk from the side. And you're having to make these decisions. Now it's whereas the first way, going back to the barn, taking days to do it, it's a little less stress-free. But you know, doing it the second way, you know, seeing these horses for the first time out back, it's, you got to make a lot of important decisions quickly. And I would say if I find a horse that I think we want to go on up the hill and bid on that kind of horse, the vet work needs to be a little clearer, because I'm going to have to interpret it right there. Preferably it has no problems and we don't have to worry about it. But in my rule of thumb is, if I have a question, if I don't understand it, I just got to walk away. Cause you know, there's going to be many more that come up here through the sales. I've read enough vet reports over the years that there are things they can have, a lot of things they can have that don't bother me. We can live with things that I know are just maturity issues. And I probably, you know, in that kind of scenario would not take a chance on a throat, because there's just too much that can go wrong there. So we're going to need a good throat doing that way. Preferably we have a horse that completely vets out, but there, like I say, there are things that I feel like are just related to immaturity and they'll grow out of. And so by the time they leave that outside ring, you know, you've pretty much made a decision. If you're going to follow them to the inside ring, you're probably going to bid on them. So that's where when they get in that big inside ring and there's only one other horse in there with them, that's where, you know, the decision needs to be made. Are we going to bid on this thing? And I plonk myself in the middle of that and just watch the horse go around and around and around and maybe stand it up a time or two to confirm that it was correct through its knees and ankles and that kind of thing. And if we still like it, we'll bid on it and try to get it. And, you know, Temple City Terror, we bought that way. You know, the first time I ever saw her was in the back corner of the outside ring. You know, a horse like Irish Aces, I got a chance to see him, you know, well before he went in the ring and compare him to some other horses and some of the others. So, those are the two main ways we go about getting our horses at the sales.
Yeah, and I will say, I know a time or two, I think we've seen one in the back where, you know, there's seen them for the first time and you really liked it. It's got a little thing on the vet report. And I think we'll text the vet and say, any chance you've had a chance to look at the pictures on this one yet? Because you just don't have enough time to get them up to the repository to look at the x-rays to make sure it's something that you know, that it's something that we can live with. And you know, we you know, vet reports are a controversial issue. You know, you see a lot of stuff about them in the media here and there. And you know, again, this is something we were talking about this morning. I mean, we were on No Name Ever. Yeah. We were on him, and we were going to buy him, and vet just said, no, you can't buy this. You can't buy it.
And it was an issue in the knee, and that's where you got to be careful. You know, right. Those can be real squirrely. Mm-hmm.
But you know, we backed off, and you know, I don't. It's one of those things where you're like, well, you know, should we have taken a chance? I don't know, but well, you know, you can't blame ourselves for not taking a chance because the vet said this is a problem, and it just worked out that the horse had a hell of a nice career, and it didn't come back to haunt him. But you know, since we're trying to be good stewards for our partners, it's tough for us to take that step. You know,
well, here's what kind of complicates things too is I don't think No Name Never had a really long career. I think that knee eventually got him, but in the meantime, he won a Grade One race. So that and that's what, you know. You feel, you know what the vet's saying, you know, that this is likely going to be an issue for him, but is it going to be 5 races from now? Is it going to be 10 races from now? What does he do in that time? You know, and a lot of people would just walk away from it, but you know, and that comes into a price issue too. And with him, I believe he was RNA'd for like right under 100,000. So it was, you know, if he'd have gone for 20, we'd have just done it and taken a chance, you know? You know, at a certain, even if they have an issue that is a relatively, it's not an issue of maturity. It's an issue that could be problematic. It still doesn't, if they're talented, they still, by the time it tells on them, who knows, they might have won the Derby by then and, you know, and retired a race or two after and would have been worth having, you know. So that's another thing you got to think about when you're doing that.
Yep, absolutely. It's never easy when you're juggling that kind of decision, for sure.
And one thing I think listeners would be really interested in too was I have always felt like the sales are our best opportunity to get new horses in. And one of the reasons you might not think about is because we've got an opportunity to comparison shop. It is one thing to go out and look at a horse at a farm one day. And, you know, we can do it. We can make a good judgment. But I feel like my eye is much stronger when I get to see, when I can comparison shop. It was like I alluded to earlier, you know, you might go out and see a horse, one off or a couple there, and you like them, but, and you know you like them, but when you can see a bunch of horses day in, day out, compare this horse to that horse, it really increases your confidence level, you know. If you've looked at, you know, 500 horses over the last couple of days, and you've got these 3 or 4, you feel just like, I think anybody would, you just feel more confident because you've seen so many and they are better than so many of the others, you know? So that's, I think this is the Keeneland September sale, because one of the things that helps us out is there's so many horses, we see so many horses, and we get a great opportunity to do comparison shopping, and that helps us a lot.
Yeah. So, people have been asking me when we get started buying, and you know, I do think, you know, the second Monday at the earliest would be when we would make a purchase. I don't think we made one. Did we make one on that early last time? I can't remember.
I don't know, but that the Keeneland sale turns into a different sale that second Monday. It's it like turns a page, and maybe we got something done on Sunday, you know, it's usually that second Monday.
Yeah, once everybody, you know, a lot of the buyers change completely.
Yeah, they leave town after the second weekend, and
And it just, it's just a whole different complexion to the sale. And that's when we feel like, you know, that's when we've been able to buy our most, typically been able to get our most value for and bang for our buck in that second week. And so, you know, I would think Monday at the earliest before we are really feel like we've got a chance to get something done. And, you know, it could even trickle over into Tuesday before we get something done. But we'll definitely be out there, you know, starting. I'm sure Mark will be out there, and I'll be out there with him, I feel sure, you know, that Saturday and Sunday before, certainly on that Sunday, just looking at some horses. And then hopefully start adding to the stable, you know, that throughout that week. And, you know, kind of the goal right now, I think we'd like to add 3 to 4. And we'll just kind of, now obviously if we come across another Temple City Taboo for $10,000 that we feel like we can get a really nice horse for a song, then maybe we end up adding another one. You know, we're always gonna buy a horse like that that's $10,000 and just you know, just a bargain that's too good to pass up. And we run into those fairly often. So I say 3 or 4, but who knows? It could end up 4 or 5, or probably not 6. But
and I would also say if you want to kind of guesstimate when we'll get started, keep an eye on how strong the sale is from the beginning. If it's super strong, people, you know, there's buyers, everybody has their budget. You know, there's the guys spending million, you know, then there's the half millions, then there's the 250s. And if the sale is really strong, you know, everybody just gets pushed back a little bit and they've got to wait a little bit longer. And if the sale is super strong, and the people above us who are spending six figures on a horse, $75,000, they might still be around on Monday because they haven't bought a horse. And that makes it harder for us. If the sale is a little softer and that money gets out of there quicker, who knows? We might start on Sunday. So that's a little bit of a factor, yep, too, the how strong the sale is in front of when we anticipate starting.
Yep. So now we do have a few hips that we just wanted to run down real quick, because these are all horses that are in the sale that are and somehow connected with Pocket Aces Racing, whether they're half siblings to our current horses. We've got one in here that we at least planned the breeding. It sold before the baby was born, but we'll go through those a little bit, just because I'm sure people that have been involved are interested to hear about siblings to their current horses or previous horses. But the first one, you know, again, probably not going to be anything that we're going to be looking at. It's a colt by Not This Time out of Sweet Candy Dance. So half brother to Triumphant Spirit. That's hip 247. So that's going to be, I guess that'll be the first day of the sale.
It's the second day. The first day is the first 181 hips.
Gotcha. Okay. So day two of the sale, things will still be pricey, or they're either going to sell for a ton, or they're going to probably not sell at all, or they're going to be not sell for much of anything because they've got problems.
Yeah. If he sells in our price range, it's because there's something very bad wrong with him.
That's right. Yeah. People, we've been asked that over the years. Well, I saw this one that went in day one and for like $50,000, why didn't you buy that one? And well, it probably had, you know, two left knees or something,
yeah,
you know, so just
a bad throat
problem
or something, you know.
Yep.
It'd be like, you know, going out and buying a new sports car for 10 grand. You know, what's wrong with this? Well, you just, it'd be a red flag straight away.
Yep. Absolutely. 1050 is Bay Filly by Medaglia d'Oro, half sister to Accusatory. I would be interested just to take a look at that one, just to see if she's as gigantic as her half brother was. Then we've got hip 1723. This is one that I think several people had pointed out to us over the last several weeks since the catalog came out, and one that got considerably more expensive last Thursday. That's again 1723. That's a colt by Tis the Law out of Nimblefoot, half brother to Irish Aces. You know, I think we would have jumped over the moon if, you know, assuming he checks the boxes physically, to have had a half brother to Irish Aces. But I think he's gonna I think he's going to be a little more expensive than he would have been.
Same kind of scenario, you know. We'll see, you know, if talk to this consigner, you know, maybe they let us know they're light, they're not getting much action. Maybe, you know, maybe he's got a vet issue that we can live with. But I would think it's most likely he's going to be too expensive.
Yeah, especially if we have good strong results on Saturday. Yeah. It's going to make him even more expensive. Hip 2049, we got another Tis the Law. This one is out of Highest Maintenance, a mare we used to own. Hip 2172, we've got a filly by Vekoma out of Queen of the Party, half-sister to King of the Party. She might have gotten a little more expensive. I think the two-year-old half-brother just won.
Yeah.
So, but certainly be interested to take a look at that one. Hip 2899 is the full brother to it, to a Chemical Reaction. We've got Hip 3119, the full sister to Caracaro Breeze. You know, certainly Caracaro has been extremely well received over this past year, and his value has gone up quite a bit. Maybe cooled off just a little bit since that big stakes win in May, but definitely there's still a lot of buzz around Caracaro. Hip 3162 is a filly by Silver State out of Bag of Jewels, so the half sister to Cyclone Ranger. You know, I will definitely swing by the barn to check this one out, because I had such a place in my heart for Cyclone Ranger, and I'm still just to this day, I'm still sick about how.
Yeah, I'd like to see him too.
Yep. Then we've got Hip 3284, Bay Colt by Nix Go.
We bred that thing, right?
Yeah. We sold her in full. So we'll have to check her. Or check him out. And then the last one that we've got in the sale. Is Hip 4046, dark brown colt by Catholic Boy out of Diamonds for Lil, half brother to Diamond Eye Jack. So we'll be keeping an eye out on him coming through the ring. There are two others, Sophisticated's half brother by Munnings, and then Spellbook's half by Collected. They were both entered in the sale, but they're out. So we've got those 10 that are, at least at this point, still scheduled to go through the ring. So interested to see how things shake out with those.
I would say just going over those. I mean, we'll see these things, but by and large, I don't want to let the fact that we have some kind of connection to any yearling up there influence whether or not we buy the sister or brother. They have to be good on their own merit. You know, and if they are, we'll buy them. But there's no nepotism in pocket.
Yeah, you can't let the fact that with Cyclone Ranger, they had Cyclone Ranger influence us into buying that half sister just because we love Cyclone Ranger so much, and because his career got. His life got cut short by that tragic issue that he had.
You've always got to. It may not be likely, but is that something that her foals are predisposed to? You know, and so that's inside. You know, even if I liked this horse as much as Cyclone Ranger, boy, that sure would be in the back of my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what we've got to look forward to. The sale kicks off on Monday. The horses will be on the ground. I would assume by Friday morning.
Yeah. For that part of the sale, they'll be coming in Friday and Saturday. Would be my guess.
Yep.
TaylorMade and Hillendale will have them there on Wednesday, probably.
Yeah, they'll have them out there early.
That's from consignor. They won't be there Wednesday, but just each consignor has their kind of schedule, and some of them get in quite a bit early, and some of them, most of them should be there by Saturday.
And I'm sure that we'll be out and about, or at least I'll be out and about through the week. I know we got a few folks that are wanting to go check them out. Our good friend Albert Lukanga, the fancy clothes designer here in Lexington. Mm-hmm. He's been hitting me up for about 2 weeks, ready to go out to the sale again. And we got a few other partners I know that are planning to be in throughout the course of the sale. So we'll be out there off and on, but you know, we won't really be getting going in earnest until you know, probably looking at some horses on that second weekend, and then hopefully start trying to buy some on the second Monday. So that's pretty much what we
and
got
again,
going on.
Folks, we'll have a lot of coverage. We'll have a lot of content for you guys to enjoy as well. For those who cannot make it out to the Keeneland September sale this year, you know, we will have YouTube videos going up. We're going to have several interviews with folks going up. You know, we talked about it a couple times on the episodes that we've been releasing up until this one. So we're going to have a lot of content for folks to enjoy. So definitely make sure that you're following us on our social medias as these pictures and these videos start getting posted. Make sure you're following us on our YouTube. All of it's under Pocket Aces Racing. Make sure for the YouTube, make sure that you're hitting those bells so you get those notifications. I know I had some people ask me about why, you know, they're not getting notifications when some of our videos on YouTube go live. Make sure that you have selected the bell and that you have selected to get notifications. And that's how you get those push notifications on your phones. So make sure those are selected, and then you're going to start getting those notifications in a more timely fashion. But other than that, I think we're done. Do you guys have any closing thoughts that you'd like to share before we kind of wrap this episode?
Hey, if you want to follow along with what we're doing at the sale, I know we sent this out to the partners previously, but if you want to follow along and get first notification on when purchases are made, send us an email, info@pocketacesracing.com, and we'll make sure that you are among the first to find out the new additions to the stable.
All right. Mark, anything?
That's all I got.
That's all I got.
All right. Yeah. Nope. Then that is going to be a wrap for us. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in for our special Keeneland September sale preview. And partners and fans, if you see us out there, if you're going to be out there, make sure you let us know, and, you know, we'll stop for a chat. But other than that, have a happy, I'm going to say Friday. So have a happy Friday. Have a good Friday. Make good choices. And the podcast is out.